We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always, over there in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, the one, the only, the incomparable, still the incomparable, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
High praise. I'm good, Ty. I'm especially excited about what the future holds for the 2021 college football season.
Oh, yeah.
And so I woke up, looked at the scores of the games that I fell asleep far before those games reached their conclusion and thought to myself, hell yeah.
Yeah, man.
Hell yeah.
I know our friend Bill Connolly is trying to will the chaos of yesteryear into existence. This could just be the year that it happens. You'll recall on the preview show, we joked around and we never quite settled on what exactly our nickname was going to be for this week. I was hung up on the brand of Spanx, you know, to just keep it together before a big occasion if you're wearing something formal. You were talking about secure your stuff, like just trying to make sure that everybody holds it together for this week. It for ended sure. up being a very Spanxian Saturday, a bit of a scratch your head Saturday, a stinky SEC refs Saturday, which we can get into in a little bit.
A solid Saturday if you watch the stream at 11 a.m. Eastern that we kind of impromptu did on YouTube Live. Yeah.
And we will do again on YouTube Live.
We'll talk about that later. Yeah.
But ultimately, as we dial in our reverbs here, of which there were many, it may have been an everyone might stink Saturday, which is, I think, why you and I are so very excited. So we will play those reverbs momentarily. If you're just finding the show, hello, how are you? I'm Ty, he's Dan. SolidVerbal.com is our website. Also, Verballers.com is where you can watch this show via live stream on Sunday mornings. You can listen to this show and many other shows early via our early access. There's also just an incredible Discord community other ballers who watch the games on Saturday, and just so many other perks that we offer on Patreon. We would urge you all to go on out to verballers.com and check that out. Daniel.
Yo.
Let's do it. Here are your week three reverbs. Have a listen.
Mr. SEC official, how many downs does it take to make Penn State punt the ball? Let's find out. One, three, four.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Ty. This is Phyllis calling from Arlington, Virginia.
Dan, Ty. Jimmy from Michigan.
Dan, Ty. This is August calling from Cumming, Iowa.
This is Kevin from New Jersey.
Hi, this is a very sad Kathy from Chicago.
Cincinnati tried to hand IU the game today, and the Hoosiers still found a way to lose with three red zone turnovers. At least we looked good losing in our retro Adidas uniforms. LEO forever, baby.
I think it's time for UConn to ask Paige Beckers if she can help them get a win.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a double reversal of fortune. Louisville turns it over to UCF, and UCF promptly turns it back over to Louisville for the game winner. Can you believe it?
This Rutgers defense, 2 weeks in a row, playing teams in the exact same helmet. This defense is coming into the big house ready.
Can I get a Michigan drive chart read? Touchdown, 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 touchdown. Call back for holding down. End of game. Go Blue.
Blake Corum has a little bit of Christian McCaffrey in him.
Hey, Ty. Hey, Dan. This is Luke in Pennsylvania, and I got to give a shout-out to my Holy Cross Crusaders for the huge bounce-back win today. I smell a Patriot League three-peat. How about you guys? Go Saders.
And Nick Saban wept, for there were no more worlds to conquer.
Can we get a dude alert for Kenneth Walker III?
Dan has doubted Michigan State for years, but we're back. Go Green!
I fell asleep during the West Virginia-Virginia Tech game. When I fell asleep, it was a West Virginia beatdown, and when I woke up, it was a Miles Park sack. Let's go Mountaineers.
Just spent, I don't know, 6 hours watching the Georgia Tech game, and I don't know if it's the six pitchers with Miller Lite or the lightning delay feeling, but I'm weirdly proud of that loss. You gotta love scoring a safety against Clemson. Go Jackets!
I don't think Purdue's drum was gonna make a difference.
Go Big Red!
But seriously, in a student body of 25,000 people, can we not have somebody kick a field goal?
So I think Oklahoma tried to crockpot Nebraska, but didn't turn it on high enough.
Does it count as a letdown look ahead when you just played Missouri and you're about to play South Carolina? Asking for a big blueprint.
Is the backup better than the starter for USC? And I mean both the quarterback and the new head coach.
Do the Trojans have a Wally Pipp situation developing in Pullman, Washington? No doubt about it.
Just want to give a shout out to the scheduling guy. I forgot to make brunch reservations for my girlfriend's birthday, so thanks for the 11 a.m. giggle.
So 5 years ago, I talked to my kids about an undefeated Iowa. Do I now have to talk to my teenagers about an undefeated Arkansas?
I may be a single, childless lesbian, but I feel a maternal urge deep within my bones to warn my children about an 8-0 Wake Forest.
Hey, this is Will in Maine. It's 7:05 Eastern, and I'm pretty sure every team is bad.
I'm just sitting here watching the Purdue-Notre Dame game, and I can't help but think, is it just me, or does Brian Kelly look like Howard the Duck?
Okay.
Okay, hold on. Let's spend the rest of the episode talking about this.
Thank you to one and all 408 Verbal One, a great batch of reverbs put together by our boy Dylan. We appreciate your participation. There was a lot to discuss in week three. Again, much like week two, on the surface, not a whole lot to really meet the eye, right? We had a couple marquee matchups that we pulled out and talked about on our preview show, the most notable of which was Penn State Auburn and, of course, Alabama Florida. But outside that, you know, outside that, it didn't appear as if there were any obvious killer games. It's always the quiet ones, though, right? It's always the quiet ones. As we now emerge from the dust of week three, I think I am left with more questions than answers. I am excited, as you are, about the college football season ahead, if only because there are so many questions. I posted a poll for those who are watching live, those Patreon subscribers who are watching live, about the vulnerability of Alabama, which we will get to momentarily. But really, Dan, the vulnerability of a bunch of big teams is, I think, where we should start our conversation this morning. Not just Alabama, not just Clemson, not just Ohio State. Like, you could go
Georgetown.
Pretty much, yeah. Georgetown. Continue. You could go down the list, right, of mm-hmm. all of these marquee teams that I feel like for the first time in forever, we are forced to now have a real conversation about, are these teams actually vulnerable or not?
Or we could just have a conversation about how fun the landscape appears, because a lot of these conferences have, or every conference has, this fat middle class, fat upper middle class, or an element of unpredictability. Like, you look at any random conference schedule in any week, like if you just skipped ahead to week 7, you would be sure of essentially nothing, right? At this point, based on early results.
We're all the ACC now, aren't we?
We are all. I mean, look, you can go around the country twice. Entertainment 720, Ty. That's what this season is. I don't know if you understand that reference, but I thought of it in the shower, and it still makes very little sense, but I wanted to shoehorn it in there. Yes, I'm excited about this season in ways where it's been a minute. Now, I don't know where you want to begin, but you're right. At the top, with Clemson in a monsoon game and the offense looking uneven and sort of fits and starts and not really having clear dudes that they can depend on like they have in years past, or Alabama's offense just looking like it entered the game in a microwave and then slowly fizzled because of how good Florida was. Or, I mean, Georgia looked very good, but like Oklahoma and their inability to really generate bigger plays. Like, it's a good thing. And I don't think we need to lament it as much as we need to celebrate how open the season looks. And that's great.
It's absolutely great. Why don't we start with Alabama, Florida, since that was kind of the premier matchup of the weekend from at least the SEC standpoint, and I think in terms of the polls. So the final score here was Alabama 31, Florida 29. To your point of Alabama's offense in a microwave, it looked like through the first quarter we were looking at a flash fry at a crock potting, because it was 21-3 in favor of Alabama. They came out on fire until suddenly they weren't. Florida made some adjustments. The last three quarters of this game were a much, much different story. This was not an utterly dominant Alabama the rest of the way, because Florida bottled them up on the ground. They had all the momentum late in this game, if we're being honest, and they could have tied it if not for the faulty two-point conversion attempt that they tried for with about 3 minutes left. It's notable here, Anthony Richardson, who we talked a great deal about, did not play at all because of the hamstring injury that he sustained a week ago, which meant that this was entirely Emory Jones's show to run. And he looked, I thought, superb down the stretch. I mean, some mistakes here and there, he acknowledged as much in his postgame comments. But again, we kind of come back to this narrative about Alabama against a mobile quarterback that isn't totally shooting himself in the foot. If you've got a good batch of talent the way that Florida does, and somebody in Dan Mullen who clearly knows how to game plan at this point for Alabama's defense, yeah, this was fun. This was fun down the stretch. I thought Emory Jones did an awesome job extending the plays with his legs and really put Alabama on their heels defensively for the first time in what felt like forever. Bryce Young was good, much better early than late, right?
Sure.
And again, it kind of comes back to this point of Alabama won. They got out of a hostile road environment with a W. But it seems entirely legit to me that we would ask the question on this Sunday morning, like, how vulnerable on a scale of 1 to 10 or a scale of 1 to 5 Jack Fowlers, as we did in our live stream on Saturday. Like, whatever metric you want to use, how do you quantify where you're at with Bama and that vulnerability metric?
I think it basically just... the question is, how much do you trust Zach Calzada at this point, right? I mean,
for A&M, right?
Because I don't think, right. I mean, it's at A&M in a couple of weeks, October 9th. And, you know, Ole Miss looked crazy dominant against Tulane, and the defense looked good and got off the field pretty regularly against the Green Wave. But situationally, or just like, is KJ Jefferson the version of himself that he's shown early on? Will he be that near the end of the year? I think they have the second to last week. So those are the questions, right? It doesn't matter what vulnerabilities you see in Alabama. It's also, well, who's going to actually take advantage? Who actually has the quarterback and the defense and the coaching and the ability to adjust to take advantage of an Alabama offensive line that was beaten by Florida's front. You know, Brenton Cox was everywhere at linebacker, like beaten after that initial surge of 21 points, which, by the way, that Emory Jones interception, I think I felt seven emotions in the time he was hit, threw it, the ball was in the air, and it was caught. Yeah. It was sort of like, oh, here it comes. Oh, God. And then when you see the release kind of flutter and sail, you're like, oh, please don't end in something regrettable. And I wasn't rooting for Florida. I just didn't want this to get out of hand. And it did. And it was quickly turned into a touchdown a couple plays later. And what was it, 21-3 at that point?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're just like, man, I just don't want this to be a 35-13, like coast and crockpotting, whatever. And to Dan Mullen's credit, he leaned on the running game. He didn't put Emory Jones in a position where he had to make a ton of plays downfield. And I, from what I could tell, it did not look like a good time to try and tackle, what was it, Malik Davis Damian Pierce and Wright. And they just sort of look like greased up battle bots out there. And it just didn't look fun. And Alabama didn't have fun. And, you know, shout out to Alabama. This was a kind of a secret win your clunkers moment because they needed that missed extra point, right? So to force Florida to attempt the, I would say, ill-advised.
Very ill-advised.
Let's rock the mesh as long as we can possibly do it at the goal line on the two-point conversion attempt. And it just didn't work out. Alabama snuffed it out and Alabama escaped with the win. But I came away very impressed with Florida up front, with the ability to adjust to a very difficult run game to defend. And I came away impressed with what Alabama looked like coming out of the second half and getting those scoring drives and Bryce Young under pressure, making plays, not making mistakes. And he nearly did a couple times.
Yeah.
But yeah, for Alabama to go into the swamp with what they are lacking in terms of what they had in previous seasons, I came impressed all the way around. There's no such thing as a moral victory, but I've certainly upgraded my thoughts about Florida's ceiling.
Oh my God. With this version of Florida moving forward, if it is this version of Florida.
And add in Anthony Richardson. Presumably.
Added Anthony Richardson for sure. This version of Florida is good enough to run the table the rest of the way and win the SEC East. Now they've got the big one against Georgia. We could talk about Georgia. I think they're good enough.
They won't be favored in that.
They won't be favored, but I think they're good enough. If they're good enough to go toe-to-toe with Bama, if they're good enough to stop the bleeding against Alabama, which is low-key very difficult to do.
You're not worried about Florida State poisoning the food of Florida? I don't know what the strategy is for the Noles at this point. I'm just spitballing here. Maybe hacking them and making them distraught ahead. I don't know.
Well, look, this was a good game. It was better than you might have expected if, like me, you turned it off after the first quarter thinking it was going to be a disaster.
Right.
Florida, to their credit, did a good job. And Bama got a tough road win. It's not easy to go to the swamp and win. 31-29 was your final. The other big in that we talked a lot about on the show, that everybody was talking about, that people were tripping over themselves advertising, was the whiteout game in State College between Penn State and Auburn. Penn State wins 28-20. This is a fun game, man. This is a fun game on like 18 different levels. Very evenly matched contest in the end. I thought both quarterbacks played the game of their lives. Both quarterbacks looked really good. Easily, far and away, the best game of Sean Clifford's career. Far and away. And Bo Nix, for all of the fun that I've had dunking on Bo Nix and the 12 road interceptions and all that, Bo Nix looks very comfortable in the Brian Harsin offense. They didn't lean on him much like they didn't with Emory Jones to do too much. I thought he looked really good. He's making more confident throws. He still kind of has that Ephus pitch of a folly floater that he throw, you know what I mean? Like
I do.
Over the middle or deep down the sidelines, and that will come back to haunt him. It didn't last night, but at some point that'll get Bo Nix. I thought he looked really good in this offense. Much the way there was the curious two-point conversion call on the Florida side, Mike Bobo had a very curious fourth and goal play called the fade down late, fourth and goal, 3 minutes left.
I was hoping for PI, but yeah.
Yeah, it was just a really bad call in my view. This was a good matchup. Penn State played well. They got a big home win. They had a kid commit at halftime. A four-star from the 2023 class, a cornerback, committed at halftime because of just the environment here just being incredible, super loud, very white. And Penn State wins. A huge home win over Auburn.
The big thing to me, well, I think you're right about the quarterbacks. Auburn doesn't have receivers. There was nothing that Penn State, I think, really feared in terms of the passing game gravitationally in the way that Penn State utilized the tight ends, both what in the Wildcat and Jahan Dotson pulling balls out of the troposphere.
Yep.
He's just incredible. And it was a great, you know, it did have shades of Baker Mayfield. I will admit this. Sean Clifford's scrambling to buy time, the sort of run forward into the right and found Jahan Dotson in the back of the end zone, bought time really impressively.
It looks like a new Sean Clifford in this offense. And I say that after having watched him two times over now, two seasons over in some capacity. He looks very different in this offense. And the way that they're putting him in positions to succeed here, I think, is notable. I think most notable is the fact that they got 19 touches between Jahan Dotson and Parker Washington. Jahan Dotson in particular, touching the ball 11 times in this game.
Yep, they threw need a to pass do more, real quick, yeah.
They need to do more of that. The offense still needs to find a way to get more out of the running game. Like, I know you like Noah Kane.
Yeah.
Noah Kane doesn't have burst, Dan. He just kind of, he's dependable when they need him. Maybe they'll turn to John Lovett, the Baylor transfer, a little bit more. They need to find a way to... I like Kevon Lee.
I think Kevon Lee runs hard.
Kevon Lee runs hard. Like, they have options, which is a good thing. They just need to figure out a way to harness that. That's really the component of this offense that I'm most concerned about at this point, but... Cliff looks good, man. He really, truly looks good.
He had time, which was nice. He stayed pretty clean for the most part. I know he got that hit, you know, throwing the Hail Mary type thing right before the half. He was protected really well, but weirdly enough, the line opened up nothing against, you know, Auburn's front was, you know, playing really, really well. But they got basically the lanes just weren't there for the Penn State running backs as well. So they're sort of half a line right now. Maybe they'll improve over the course of the season, or maybe they'll just have fewer dangerous defensive lines. But they're going to, you know, still going to have Ohio State. I think they still have Iowa. So that's something to clean up for sure, because that could be an issue, because we still are watching Sean Clifford run the show. And granted, it was great and he was in rhythm, especially throwing up the seam to tight ends. And I thought Penn State's defense really came to play. And the offense, I think, is in a pretty good place. I think I had this almost exactly. Didn't I have this as an 8-point Penn State win? Something along there, like 31-23. Yeah, we were pretty aligned with this. I mean, Penn State's the most probably battle-tested team in the country at this point. They and Iowa, maybe, depending on what you think about Indiana.
Yep.
So BYU, maybe?
I'm excited. I don't know.
BYU, and Penn State was able to survive some pretty horrific officiating moments as well.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up. We'd be remiss if we did not mention that Penn State played against both Auburn and SEC refs. SEC refs on the whole had a really bad day. In this game, SEC refs accidentally took a down away from Penn State. First off, they called just an inconceivable intentional grounding call on Sean Clifford. It was clearly a miscommunication, as they said on the broadcast. He wasn't even under duress. He just threw the ball long. He was expecting a go. Somebody broke off the route. They called grounding on that, which was ridiculous. And then they screwed up what down it was supposed to be, which ultimately ended up with Penn State punting on third down as opposed to fourth down. That really left a bad taste in the mouths of Penn State fans. There were other calls in this game that were very questionable. Some of the spots were weird and, you know, were they makeup calls against Auburn? Who knows? But between their performance in this game against with Penn State and Auburn, and then the Mississippi State Memphis game, which we'll talk about in a little bit, just not a good day. Being a ref is a thankless job. I think we'll all acknowledge as much. It's very rare that you have such moments like we saw on Saturday that you can really point to and say, "Wow, that was extremely terrible."
It's tough.
The way it was.
Yeah,
it was bad.
Yeah, I think so. They survived. And it was a great environment once again. Cool to see.
Very cool to see. We will definitely judge Penn State moving forward now as they get into the teeth of their Big Ten schedule. We'll talk about Ohio State. We'll talk about Michigan. We'll talk about Michigan State here momentarily. But a lot to digest on the Big Ten side.
Penn State at Iowa, by the way, October 9th.
It's coming, man. That's going to be a big one. As we move forward now, Dan, between the Alabama and Florida games and the Penn State-Auburn game, kind of sucking up the oxygen in the room, what else stood out to you? What was your next favorite game of the day?
That's a good question. I really liked watching, rewatching, I guess, or after the fact, UCLA, Fresno State.
Why don't we go out west?
Do you want to go west? There was a lot of chaos there. I think we, you know, Michigan State, Miami is worth diving into as well. But yeah, we can go out west next. We,
let's go out west.
End with them. Let's start them.
Yeah. I mean, we often pan over the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that here because there was some chaos, especially in the Pac-12 South. We had a couple games. BYU knocks off ASU 27-17. We had the Fresno win, the late win over UCLA 40-37. We also had a triple overtime win for San Diego State over
Utah. A winning Philly special. Yeah.
With a Philly special, 33-31 in triple overtime. And then we did have some, I guess, quarterback controversy, if you want to call it that. I don't know if maybe we've got one now with USC. USC was on the road in Pullman, had to turn to Jackson Dart after Keaton Slovis got hurt, and Jackson Dart came in and had a pretty good game. But why don't we start with the Fresno win, Dan? 40-37. Please. Game was fun as hell. UCLA trailed most of the way. The last 7 minutes got weird, though. The last 7 minutes got real weird, didn't they?
They very much did. It seemed like UCLA had a game-winning touchdown drive, and then they seemed tired on defense. And Jake Haener, who was struggling to move, could not plant on his front foot, was able to quickly lead the Bulldogs down for the game-winning touchdown with merely a few seconds left. And so UCLA, I mean, Fresno controlled this game. If you watch back, like, Fresno really was in the driver's seat. The receivers kept getting open. They really did a great job against UCLA secondary. I think it was Jalen Cropper was leading the way. They ran well with Ronnie Rivers. Jake Haener was accurate and was unfazed by this UCLA team. And I thought a lot of the credit to Fresno's success goes to what they're able to do up front, completely limiting UCLA on the ground, much like they did with Oregon in the first half of that game in Autzen Stadium. Fresno's defense up front was sensational. I think Zach Charbonnet finished with like six carries for 19 yards, something like that, after destroying a couple teams early. So came away crazy impressed with Fresno State. They seem like the class of the Mountain West at this point with how strong they've looked against high-level teams. So UCLA made plays. DTR made plays. He had like the weird, crazy fumble where it just sort of slipped out of his hand.
Yeah,
it just, there like were freak pig, plays right? for just UCLA that swung this game. Yeah.
Game was fun as hell. UCLA scored a touchdown late, 54, excuse me, seconds remaining in the game. Mm-hmm. They turn the ball over at that point to Fresno. All they got to do is get a stop. Jake Haener only needs 40 seconds to go to go down and hit his guy, Jalen Cropper, who had a monster game. He had 14 catches, 141 yards, and that one touchdown. UCLA had trouble defending kind of the corners of the end zone for some odd reason. And Fresno marches down the field. They end up winning the game by a 40-37 score. The pass defense did let them down in the end. They need to get that sorted. But big win for Fresno and big win for BYU, man. Look, I locked up ASU. I've been on ASU for a while.
Come on.
I thought outside of Arizona State committing four turnovers and 16 penalties, they actually looked okay.
Yeah, outside of the fact that they're a poorly coached team trying to contend for a division title.
It was a great scene in Provo. There was no letdown after the triumphant victory in the Holy War. We talk a lot about moments on this show, right? Mm-hmm. Moments this and moments that. Stats are, of course, hollow if you don't win those moments. And totally. I think that's really the cautionary tale of this game. Because BYU stats, if you look at the box score, if you didn't watch, BYU stats aren't going to blow you away here. Jaren Hall's numbers, quarterback for BYU, he had rather pedestrian numbers. He had two touchdowns, two picks. Mm-hmm. But his athleticism really changed this game. What he was able to do with his legs changed this game. Tyler Algier, again, averaged just over 3 yards per carry, but pulled a Don Beebe in a very critical moment after an interception, just jumped up.
Not just an interception, a terrible decision.
By Jaren Hall. But Tyler Algier runs up from behind and kind of like catapults himself off the guy who's running with the ball. Tomahawk chops the ball out of his hands. BYU recovers. Yeah. That was arguably the biggest moment of the game.
Oh, it was enormous. ASU outgained. They had big plays. They spread the ball around really nicely on offense. But yeah, BYU won those moments, whether it was timely passing or it was Gunnar Romney had another good game, was able to get up above the ASU secondary at times. And Arizona State is just, I mean, what they beat the hell out of Arizona State at the same time. BYU won moments in the game.
You know what
ASU
it is, Dan?
Beat ASU as well. Yep.
They never rise to the moment.
No. I mean, they've won a couple of those matchups, the non-conference matchups, and they beat Oregon in what's going to probably end up being the signature win of the Herm Edwards era, as short as it appears it will be. But yeah, they hung on against Oregon, which is great, a couple of years ago with Justin Herbert. And they have those Michigan State wins, like the 10-70 wins in the non-conference part of the schedule. But yeah, against BYU, I don't know if it was a look-ahead moment. I don't know if it was just an assumption that ASU is in a much better place as a program than BYU. I mean, it's Colorado next week, so it wasn't a look-ahead situation. UCLA in a couple weeks. But yeah, ASU is just, they're sloppy. They're absolutely sloppy. And with a winnable game in hand, they let it go. And not in hand, but...
Yeah,
in,
no, I hear you.
Speaking ahead of their windshield, yeah.
Speaking of winnable games, here is what BYU's got on the docket the rest of the way. USF at Utah State, Boise at Baylor at Wazoo, a game against Virginia at home, Idaho State at Georgia Southern at USC. I'm not sounding the alarm of an undefeated BYU. I'm not doing that.
Sure.
But if there are more than two losses on that schedule, in this present version of BYU and the way they're playing as a team,
mm-hmm.
I would be stunned.
Yeah, I mean, it will say at USC, there's a decent chance of a loss. Boise, we'll see. And, you know, Virginia's going to be tough. I don't know what Virginia's schedule looks like around then, but we'll talk about the Hoos in a minute. But, yeah, the best of BYU can be in a pretty good spot, especially getting Boise, Virginia at home.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Elsewhere in the Pac-12, I did want to circle back to that San Diego State win. It's notable here, Chaz Brewer, our boy, got yanked late in the third quarter because he just was not effective.
Right.
They brought in Cam Rising. He erased a late 14-point deficit and took this one to overtime. Poor Chaz Brewer, man. Guy thinks he's leaving Baylor to get away from the punishment that was burdened upon him by a horrible Baylor offensive line for 2 years running.
Mm-hmm.
And he steps into the situation now with Utah where the line is better, but really not that much better. They're having trouble up front right now.
Yeah, the running game basically disappeared. Now, San Diego State has a good defense. San Diego State is a good defensive team, and they're going to challenge a lot of fronts on their schedule.
Yeah.
But still, this was not, I think, the expected experience when Utah was heading to San Diego. Yeah.
USC 45, Wazoo 14, Jackson Dart comes in. He's got the eye black thing. He looks like Scar in The Lion King. We'll maybe look past that just as a college football entity. But it look, we're in backup better than the starter territory.
Yeah. I don't know what the nature of Keaton Slovis' injury or how long he'll be out. I know he was without his helmet. I don't know if that's a head thing. I don't know. I full on do not know the extent of it. I haven't seen details yet. I don't know. Have you? Has there been anything? I just saw it was a big hit. I saw the hit.
I think I read that he will practice this week and they're going to play it by ear, which is as clear as you can get. Yes, we have a bit of a quarterback controversy.
Yeah, Jackson Dart, true freshman, much in the way that Keaton Slovis entered the situation when a quarterback ahead of him got hurt. He was a late comer in terms of a top recruit, but I think was because Utah was one of the few states out west that played football last fall, really shone with an added spotlight and was like a national player of the year and became kind of a hot quarterback name late in the process. And USC also had another top quarterback recruit in the class, but Jackson Dart, clearly the backup, and came in, made a couple mistakes early that Wazoo wasn't able to take advantage of, and then got in a really nice rhythm within this offense, mobile, and looks to be like a pretty strong arm. So USC and having one of those good problems where they have potentially too many interesting quarterbacks.
Can you imagine the pun potential of having a quarterback with the last name?
It's such a good name.
Drake London, by the way, need to mention, 13 catches for 170 and two touchdowns. He's going to have a monster season. Elsewhere in the Pac-12, very quickly here, six other games. Arizona loses to Northern Arizona. No huge surprise there. Washington wins big over Arkansas State. Stanford takes it to Vandy. Oregon, maybe you can talk for a hot minute about Oregon and Anthony Brown, but they win 48-7 over Stony Brook. Cal over Sac State, and Oregon State blanks Idaho 42-0.
Oregon State is somewhat interesting. I don't believe Cal's going to be that good this year. Oregon struggled in the first half, and understandably so, because Stony Brook is an elite of the elite. No, they struggled because there was going to be a letdown after the Ohio State game. Anthony Brown looked like he was knocked out at the very end of the first half, took a couple big hits, and so Ty Thompson, the much-heralded true freshman, came in, and Oregon slowly paced away the win. Played a lot of youth in the second half. Not much to add with that. Tanner McKee, I mean, it's Vandy, but Tanner McKee, very accurate. Stanford looks like they're moving in the right direction. We'll see when they take on some more difficult opponents, but they certainly looked the part against USC. Colorado's bad.
Yeah.
It was like 1 yard per play. Colorado is bad right now. And Washington looks strong. It's Arkansas State, but a much needed net crack game for Washington, a complete performance. And hopefully this means Washington will be more competitive against the best teams on their schedule, because Montana exists.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that piece of evidence exists that is pretty damning, and what they were not able to do against Michigan as well. So hopefully that sort of spells for optimism. And Arizona lost because they're also not good.
Yeah, you mentioned Colorado, 63 total yards on offense in their 30-0 loss to Minnesota. Why don't we hop on over to the Big Ten?
Wazoo, not all that good. They're up 14-0 and then did nothing. And after the game, Nick Rolovich was asked, like, hey, you keep getting out to leads and just getting demolished in the second half. And he sort of was confused. He was like, is that a thing? Oh, I haven't even thought about it. Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? What is going on? I was very confused by it. Okay, let's move on.
Cincinnati 38, Indiana 24, and Michigan State 38, Miami 17. Outside of the Penn State game, and outside of some of the questions maybe that we'll have about Ohio State and what we'll want to talk about with Michigan, these are the two big games, right? So the Cincinnati Indiana game was strange on a couple different fronts. And I remember on the preview show, I asked, how do you feel about this point spread? Because the point spread was at 3.5 in favor of visiting Cincinnati. It stayed at 3.5 all the way up until kickoff. Didn't budge an inch.
Mm-hmm.
Cincy came out really flat. Really flat. And they were dominated by Indiana for about 28 minutes. They were down 14-0. And then the entire tenor of this game changed after there was a targeting call late in the second quarter against the Hoosiers. After that, Cincinnati kind of finds its life, scored 10 straight points at the end of the second quarter, go into halftime 14-10. They grab the lead in the third quarter. They go back and forth with Indiana a little bit, and then eventually they pulled away late. I don't want you to get the wrong impression of this game. It was not a fun watch, okay? It felt like it took forever.
Yep.
There were a lot of mistakes. Cincy never quite got over that feeling of being flat, but did enough late to pull away and eventually win this one by 14 on the road, which is a good win against a Big Ten team.
Sure.
It was painful to watch at points because Michael Penix, I think, confirmed what you said on the preview show, that he's just like, he's got potential, but he's not right yet. Like, had three picks in this game. Indiana added a fumble, I guess, a little bit later on in this contest. So Indiana still mistake prone. They're fun to watch. They're fun to root for. But there's just something like, they're not going to be able to recapture that magic, at least not yet, that we saw in the 2020 campaign. A bit of a clunker, I think, is how I characterize this for Cincinnati. They won in the end. It looks like it was a lot easier of a win than it ended up truly being if you watch this thing. But, you know, you'll take the win on the road against a Power 5 team. I think that's what this amounts to.
Yes, they had the long kick return, which helped to distance Cincinnati. Desmond Ridder did not look that good with his arm, but was able to pick up some key moments with his legs. The Cincinnati defense, after falling down early, looked strong, as expected, and forced Michael Penix into mistakes, especially that last Penix mistake where, man, it was in slow motion in my head, much like the Emory Jones one, where I'm just like, not like this, Michael.
Yeah.
Where he's rolling out to his left and throws it across his body to the center of the field in sort of desperation, this is not going to, against a good secondary, this is not going to go well. And it didn't. It got picked off, and that sort of sealed things. Came away impressed. This was a win your clunker game for Cincinnati. And by the way, Indiana, they have Western Kentucky on the road next week. After that, are you ready for the defenses that they're going to face?
Let's hear it.
At Penn State, Michigan State, Ohio State, ooh, at Maryland, at Michigan. Maryland has a good defense, friends. I don't know why I was going to give a little add-in at the end there, but they do. Maryland absolutely has a good defense. And even those first three games, like, who starts against Ohio State? Is it Penix or is it other? Jack Tuttle or whoever. Like, I might take the money on somebody else because I don't know how much longer this can last.
Yeah.
The string of defenses, if you include Cincinnati, just excluding Western Kentucky, it's damn.
They were going good for a while.
Maybe Rutgers has a good defense. Who knows?
They were going fine for a while. And then This was a classic example of a game where you are reminded that it's a 60-minute contest.
Sure.
60-minute contest, and you got to sustain the intensity the full way through. Indiana just couldn't do that. And since he rose to the occasion, you know, it wasn't pretty. It was hard to watch. Honestly, this game took forever. But in the end, they get it done. 38-24. Cincinnati, notably, has a huge game in South Bend in 2 weeks.
They do.
And that is amid a little string of games here for Notre Dame that I'm going to talk about momentarily. But Cincinnati will have another opportunity to get themselves in the national spotlight. And, you know, we can maybe pretend that they have a playoff chance. I don't know. But a win's a win. You'll take it on the road.
A win's a win. You win by double digits against a Big Ten team because you need to perform in those bigger moments against bigger teams. Great. And Indiana started the season as a top 20 team, and the path to a bowl is getting dicey.
It is getting narrow. Speaking of winning by double digits, not over a Big Ten team, but over Miami. Incredible. I called out Michigan State. I said, I like them outright.
Mm-hmm.
In fairness, this was a close game. This was 17-14 until the fourth quarter. And that's when Sparty went on this crazy run. 21-3.
Quite literally. Yeah.
Quite literally. 21-3 run in the fourth quarter. They win this one going away. Another impressive showing for Sparty. Peyton Thorne and this rushing attack looks really legit. Thorne had four touchdowns, 261, didn't commit any errors. Kenneth Walker III, now a dude with a capital D, 172 rushing. Yeah. He caught a touchdown as well. This was Miami's worst home non-conference loss since 1996. Miami is, I don't think, in a good place. Derek King had numbers, but four turnovers, two touchdowns, or two interceptions, excuse me.
The fumbles, the red zone. Yeah, it was all ugly.
Yeah, so two ships kind of passing in the night going in different directions. Michigan State with a lot of wind at its back. I think a workable schedule over their next four games, Nebraska, Western Kentucky, Rutgers, and Indiana, they can win those games. And Miami in a place now where we thought, with the veteran presence coming back this season, we thought with, you know, another full offseason under Manny Diaz that this program was going to be in a much different spot. But thus far, they have just failed to deliver.
Miami looks like a six-win team. Miami just looks, they're too sloppy on both sides of the ball. The tackling issues, the offensive line is a nightmare once again. The mistakes on offense, and they've got a, Charleston Rambo was awesome. Like, there are just individuals on this team who are incredible and rise to moments and make plays and keep Miami in the game. Their kicker nailed like a 50-plus yarder again, Borregales.
Yep.
But Michigan State just looks like a team.
They look good.
They just, especially teams that, you know, it's sort of close heading into the fourth quarter and then they just rip it open. It speaks to focus. It speaks to discipline. It speaks to they're just in shape. They're just, the stamina is there for Michigan State. So to go to Miami, for Michigan State, especially given the depths to which they fell these past few years, I did not see Peyton Thorne performing on this level. Jalen Naylor was really good, big plays. I came away crazy impressed. And as Bill Connolly mentioned on our Friday show, the Big Ten right now, especially with Ohio State's vulnerability, which we can get to in a second, I mean, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, Wisconsin, Iowa, like,
it's there.
Even Maryland. Maryland has the defense. Like, there are guys on offense. Like, there are just, everybody is sort of a most, not everybody. There is the highest chunk to me of mostly built Megazords, right? Maybe they're leaning in one direction or something like that, but
yeah.
Really impressive what these Big Ten teams, these, you know, top five or six teams are going to do to each other. Can't wait. Because Michigan State is, I think early on this year, is there a team as unexpectedly good as Michigan State of Power Five teams or otherwise?
No.
It's tough to find.
No, you can't. Michigan State has done really, really well here.
Good job by Mel Tucker. Really impressive. Seasons. Yeah.
You mentioned Ohio State 41-20. Don't look at that score. Don't look at that score and glean too much into this game. So they pulled away late, but they had a hard time doing it. This one was 27-20 until 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Credit to Travion Henderson, the true freshman, who is just, speaking of Megazoids,
yeah,
24
Megazord.
Carries,
yeah, yeah.
277 yards and three touchdowns. They had no answer for him. My guess is that you're going to see a lot of Travion Henderson this year. But Tulsa's got a good defense, man. We've got a good defense. We warned everybody going into this game. Don't take it for granted. I think Ohio State was like a 25 or 26 point favorite going in. We both kind of like Tulsa given that circumstance. Matt Barnes notably called the plays for the Ohio State defense. You'll recall there was a little bit of controversy with regard to Kerry Coombs. Still the defensive coordinator, but after a bit of a rocky start, they handed the play calling duties over to Barnes. And I guess did fine for whatever it was. I had more questions about the offense really getting going, kind of getting out of the mud here. I think it speaks to the question we asked at the very top of the show. Is Ohio State more vulnerable? I think we kind of knew the answer to that question after the first couple games. I think we both were trending in the direction of yes, but this is another indication that Ohio State's still very good. They have a ton of talent. They're going to be fine. Ultimately, they're going to win double digits.
Right.
But with the way that the Big Ten East is looking more formidable now with Penn State and Michigan State and Michigan and even Maryland, as you rightfully called out, it's not going to be as smooth of sailing for Ohio State as we may have initially thought.
Look, it's still early. Right. It's still early with a new quarterback and a number of full-time pieces still getting their feet wet.
Yeah.
CJ Stroud looks ambivalent a little too often for me, considering the line in front of him and the receivers he has at his disposal. Like, there's just, he looks a little bit arrhythmic to me. And I don't know if that's just an early season young quarterback, you know, getting used to things kind of thing. Defensively, I guess they looked a little bit better, but you're right. The story was the offense and the amount of time it took to realize, let's just give it to Travion Henderson.
Yeah.
Let's just give it to Travion Henderson. Almost shades of the game against Northwestern last year, different rhythm to it. But when they're like, oh, let's just give it to Trey Sermon. And he ran for whatever it was, 300 yards. And Travion Henderson nearly did that.
Yeah.
And Henderson just looks like one of the three or four best running backs in college football already. So
he's got a very quick first step.
Yeah.
Or I should say after his foot in the ground, as everyone likes to say on the broadcast, after he puts that foot in the ground, he just has an incredible first step to get up to full speed. And it just makes him so dangerous. Yeah. He looks very much the part. And I was waiting for a game like this from him to see him be more involved in the offense. And look, they got a big performance from him when they needed it. There's no doubt about it.
No doubt about it. Here's the full list of tough road games Ohio State has before they travel to Ann Arbor. There was the full list that I just read out for you. So I don't know. Adjust accordingly. At Rutgers, at Indiana, at Nebraska. Like, I think I'm still feeling fairly good about Ohio State, but it's just different. It's a different Buckeye experience through a few weeks.
We'll talk about Nebraska here in a little bit when we get to the Big 12. Yeah. Let's round out the Big Ten very quickly. Maryland wins on a last-second field goal, 20-17 over Illinois. That one was played earlier.
Defense. Really impressive.
Yep.
Yeah.
Rutgers wins over the Delaware Blue Hens, 45-13. You mentioned the Minnesota-Colorado game. I'll just call it out quick. 30-0, Minnesota wins. Trayson Potts looks pretty good, again, filling in for Mo Ibrahim.
I don't think it means much either way for Minnesota. I think Colorado's that bad. So, yes, good. Pitch a shutout. Great.
Iowa wins 30-7 over Kent State. Tyler Goodson, 153, three touchdowns. We will talk more about Iowa moving forward, but it may be time for us to dust off the talkingtoyourkidsaboutiowa.com domain that we still own as of about 2015. They look really good. They're going to continue to move up in the polls. Michigan looks really good, Dan. Michigan, 63-10, over Northern Illinois. They scored 9 straight touchdowns to open up this game. 373 yards and 8 touchdowns on the ground. That includes 125 and 3 scores for Blake Corum, who looks ridiculous. Michigan has Rutgers next week, and then they go on the road to play Wisconsin, which is going to be probably their first taste of a real defense. But Michigan, for their part, thus far looks really, really good.
Washington has a real defense. Washington just doesn't have a real offense.
Correct. Thank you.
Yeah.
And finally, Notre Dame 27, Purdue 13. Any thoughts on those other games before I go off about Notre Dame?
Iowa looked kind of sloppy on offense, but Tyler Goodson got loose, so that was nice. And it's fine. You win by, 20 some odd points and hold Kent State down. It's what a really good team should do. I'm still worried about Spencer Petras and big moments and, you know, if the game's on his arm. Michigan did what it should do. I think we've kind of seen this story, though, before with Michigan, where they're just smashing these down teams. Northern Illinois didn't win a game last year, I don't believe. So they're in a tough spot, although they did beat, who'd they beat early? Georgia Tech? Is that who they beat?
Yep. Went for two.
So Michigan absolutely did what a top team should do, if indeed Michigan is a top team. I'd like to see that on Cade McNamara's arm against some better defenses before I fully come around to Michigan. But Blake Corum is a really impressive running back. He is. Yep. He's a very impressive dude. And I think Michigan adds to the intrigue of the Big Ten. And I'm pulling up their season right now. But no, otherwise, yeah, Rutgers is 3-0, by the way.
Yep.
Northwestern had terrible quarterback play for a majority of this game and kind of made a game of it in the second half against Duke. But that's a kind of a terrible loss for the Big Ten and Northwestern because Duke has been extremely down. I'm pulling up Michigan's schedule right now. Michigan has, moving forward, as you mentioned, Rutgers at Wisconsin is going to be huge. At Nebraska, we'll see. That's a good defense. If Michigan's offense performs against the Huskers, that's impressive. Northwestern, who I'm sort of downgrading at the moment. At Michigan State, Halloween weekend's going to be choice, Ty.
Yep.
Indiana at home, at Penn State, at Maryland, Ohio State. So a tough way to finish things off, but I'm encouraged by what I've seen so far.
Yeah, Notre Dame won by 14 at home over Purdue. Purdue never got the drum in, by the way, for those of you wondering.
Lame. Continue.
Bastards didn't let the drum in, which is stupid, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the third straight game now for Notre Dame where it felt like if a few plays go the other way, they're going to lose. It was definitely not as close as the previous two games that they played in, notably against Florida State and then last week against Toledo. But, you know, it hung in the balance here for a little bit. The biggest issue for Notre Dame is the offensive line, which is crazy to say, given that that's been a relative strength for them over the last, God, I can't even tell you how many years now. It's really been a staple of the Brian Kelly era, how he's built up that line. But they're dealing with injuries. They had a third stringer at left tackle. They've got guys playing out of position up front. It's just, it's not a great situation on the line right now for Notre Dame, especially for a team that we thought was going to build its entire offense around the rushing attack of Kyren Williams and Chris Tyree.
So what you're saying is Harry Highstand, retroactive Broyles Award winner.
Bring him back.
now that we know what Notre Dame's offensive line has looked like without him for a couple of years. Okay.
Yeah, if not for one big rushing play by Kyren Williams, they wouldn't have been over 100 yards on the ground. Defense also still a work in progress, but it, you know, as long as they've got Kyle Hamilton back there, who remains a machine and is in on every play and had a pick in this game, a work in progress, still giving up too many big plays in key situations. But the thing about Notre Dame is this. If you look at the schedule, and I'm not going to analyze the schedule here, I want to move on and talk about the Big 12. If Notre Dame is 10 to 15% better across the board, they go undefeated. 10 to 15% better.
They got Jackson Dart, friend. Maybe.
They're not that far off.
Okay.
10 to 15% better. Most of that coming along the offensive line. But of the remaining teams in the schedule, Cincinnati look vulnerable. You can beat USC at home. Virginia Tech, like who knows what Virginia Tech
is. Yeah, their home road splits are great.
Yeah.
I mean, Wisconsin's neutral, but yeah.
Let's just leave it at that. And let's move on, and we'll talk about the Big 12. Talk to me about the Oklahoma-Nebraska game, because Oklahoma wins the game 23-16, but Nebraska did something in this game that I think is a bit of a blueprint for other defenses, and that is they hung back. They did not give any huge explosive plays to Spencer Rattler. They made him sit back and wait, and they had a lot of success with that. This is a defensive game through and through, and Nebraska did just a really good job of taking away the big play, and they gave themselves a chance because of it.
Yeah, I mean, they also have the pieces on defense to do it, and that's a big deal that Nebraska has developed the guys, especially in the back end, to run with teams like Oklahoma. Nebraska's issue is not defense, as we've talked about, and they did a good job in this game, as you mentioned, keeping Oklahoma in front of them. And on the Oklahoma side, we sort of talked about this before the season. Like, outside of Rattler, I don't think they have dudes in the way that they used to, be it a running back or receiver or on the offensive line at the moment. Their line's fine. It's not an issue. But the hallmark of this Oklahoma team these past few years has been creativity and developing guys into game breakers. And they ran the ball all right, impressively at times, but nothing crazy. And Spencer Rattler presses a little bit too much and is still good and has a crazy arm, but was really unable to get into a rhythm. And it was weird. It was what, a 3-touchdown spread?
Yep. 23, I think, is where it settled before kickoff.
With one member of this show extremely confident in that cover.
You were. No,
and
you were right.
Taking the points. I just came away, you know, Adrian Martinez is going to make, in that sort of Brock Purdy mold, 3 to 5 awful decisions with the ball downfield, but also make some good passes, which is what Adrian Martinez was able to do, which one of them, by the way, was with a Gus Johnson call that included the word drop. If you're going to use the word drop in a call and it's not a receiver dropping it, maybe go with another verb. I know it's tough in the moment, but he was like, and he dropped. Sit into the box. Like, oh, okay. Took a lot of emotions in that. Adrian Martinez made plays with his feet, bought time, threw an interception that was an incredible, incredible play from the Oklahoma DB. And I know people were saying like, well, it was 4th and 18. He probably should have just like swatted it down. Let's just appreciate athleticism, people.
I love Gus. You know, I love Gus. Gus is getting to the point of WWE ring announcer. He's getting very close.
He's reading the clippings.
He's getting very close to it. I love Gus, though. I love the emotion.
He's great.
By the way, I should mention that Oklahoma's defense was also very good. I don't know if I mentioned that, but their defense was very good in this game as well. Like I said, game led by defense. You get the win 23-16, but Nebraska asking some questions, of the Oklahoma offense that they didn't necessarily answer. Speaking of Oklahoma, Oklahoma State on the road at Boise State. This was a 9 p.m. kickoff. I couldn't watch this game because of the blue-on-blue thing.
Yeah, your eyeballs.
I couldn't. It was giving me a crazy headache.
Your faulty eyeballs.
I couldn't do it. But I did go back. I watched the highlights as best I could. I know I've dunked a lot on Spencer Sanders over the years here.
Mm-hmm.
I've done so without really mentioning what's going on with their wide receiver core, which is not insignificant. It's really banged up. They were without Jaden Bray, Braden Johnson, and Tay Martin in this game. They're all out. And so that's why if you look at the box score, Oklahoma State effectively went full Wisconsin. They went full Michigan, just 13 passing attempts for Spencer Sanders. They leaned really heavily on Jaylen Warren in the running game and on their defense. Their defense did a good job blanking Boise in the second half.
They both blanked each other.
They did. Yeah. It was 21-20 at half, and there were no points after that. But the Cowboy defense again comes to play. It wasn't just the blanking of Boise. It was also the partial blocking of a potential go-ahead field goal with 2 minutes left. So a guy gets up, just gets a fingertip on it, which would have been a game-winning 36-yard field goal. Again, the Cowboys answer the call here, do what they got to do on defense. It gets real, if I'm being honest, for Oklahoma State this week because they
Baylor Bears.
They start off their conference slate with Kansas State with a big win as well. But there is something to be said for winning with defense, doing what you got to do. And hopefully for the Pokes, they can get this receiving core back, man. I mean, it's just they don't have any weapons.
Yeah, they're decimated. Yeah, especially since the guy who developed all those receivers over the years is now their offensive coordinator in Casey Dunn. So, you know, they're prepared to do so. Yeah, but they're just so beat up. They manufactured a win. They did a really good job going on the road against a tough opponent and leaned on the ground game. It was a Jaylen Warren who really popped once he hit some open field.
Yep.
Great win for Oklahoma State. Absolutely great win to go on the road and come away with a win ahead of the conference season, which, by the way, K-State, I believe, is without Skylar Thompson. And Will Howard actually had a nice game against Nevada, but it's a different K-State team.
Yeah, by the way, we should note, as we did on the preview show, that Oklahoma State was going to altitude.
Sort of. Like 2,000 feet.
2,000 feet, but I forgot I had that sound. Okay.
Please.
Elsewhere, you mentioned other action, the Big 12. West Virginia 27-21 over Virginia Tech, which we'll come back to and talk about. Will Howard did have a nice game as K-State won by 21 over Nevada.
Strong up front,
38-17. Iowa State rolled. This was a later kickoff at UNLV. 48-3. Better game for Brock Purdy. We had wins for Baylor over Kansas. Texas Tech in a game where Tyler Shuck looked pretty good, 54-21 over Florida International. And Casey Thompson, 15 of 18 in a big 58-0 win over Rice. But circling back to that West Virginia game, you were all in on West Virginia. They were your lock.
Yeah, it looked really good early.
Looked really good early.
Being all in, yeah.
Tech tried coming back late, but couldn't quite get the job done.
Yes, correct. Letty Brown, really good at what he does for West Virginia. And so good to see a lot of the energy in Morgantown. So that was a nice win. Baylor, Kansas was relatively close at the half, but especially with what they did on the ground in the second half, they're able to pace an impressive win against Kansas. And sorry, what was the other game you mentioned there?
We also mentioned
Tyler
Iowa
Shuck
State.
Beat up on FIU. Yeah, Iowa State is UNLV, whatever. Yep. Bijan Robinson, I mean, it was Rice, whatever. You know, no disrespect, but let's see some more.
Virginia Tech had a chance to tie this one.
They did.
They had a chance to tie it. They pick off Jarrett Deggie with 2 minutes left.
They were down 27-7 at one point.
Yeah.
And then they came back. They had a chance to tie it. Fourth and goal, 45 seconds left. Braxton Burmeister, incomplete pass. But what I'll say is this. Even in defeat, the fact that Tech played as hard as they did, despite being down 20, I think is a good sign for Justin Fuente. Because that's a situation where he can lose the team. Where if we're week sure. three and... You know, we've had some moments here in the past. A year ago, we may have had the conversation of, is Fuente going to stick around? Are they playing hard for Fuente? They fought in this game. Even in defeat, they were getting hammered early. But the fact they stuck around, that they came back, that they made this a game, I think is good for him.
You can tell me, Virginia Tech now 2-1, I believe. You can tell me any final record for the Hokies, and I will believe you. Looking at their schedule. No, literally any final record from this point on, almost. Now they have Syracuse, they have Georgia Tech with a backup quarterback, at least at the moment. You know, there's Duke there, but you can say 5-7, you can say 9-3, and I'll just nod. I'll just say, okay, I can see it. So, yeah. By the way, the other thing with the Big 12 that I should mention, I was watching Oklahoma-Nebraska with my mother-in-law, and she was watching closer than I was, and she said, Joel Klatt, really big on microcosms.
Oh, loves it.
Really, loves really big on microcosms.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay, that's all.
SEC, not a whole lot to report. So we had a bunch of big wins. We had Arkansas, KJ Jefferson looked really good. Mm-hmm. Win by 35 over Georgia yeah. Southern. Hendon Hooker counted for 4 touchdowns. He got the nod for Tennessee in their big win over Tennessee Tech. Connor Bazelak looked good as Mizzou knocked off Southeast Mizzou State. Texas A&M behind Zach Calzada wins 34-0 over New Mexico. Kentucky a little bit closer than you might expect in a win over Tennessee Chattanooga. Will Levis made a comment after the game that Kentucky didn't look good in practice on Friday, and it did show here. Kind of played yeah. this one in a fog, like a low energy effort with a lot of mistakes, and he didn't look good. He had 2 picks, but they trailed, I think, early in the fourth quarter here before they got their act together. But Kentucky gets the win. Ole Miss wins big over Tulane. LSU wins big over Central Michigan. Georgia gets JT Daniels back. He throws 3 touchdowns in a win over South Carolina. Luke Doty was back, by the way, for South Carolina.
Yeah. Did it make a difference?
Not really.
Okay.
The big game, though, that we haven't yet talked about in the SEC is this Mississippi State game. Mississippi Correct. State goes on the road to Memphis. They lose 31-29. This was a very bizarre game. A very bizarre ending to this game that also featured a very bizarre play. Mm-hmm. So there was a 94-yard punt return for touchdown for Memphis. It looked as if Mississippi State had downed the ball on the 6-yard line after a punt. A guy from Memphis just streams in, grabs the ball, and runs with it.
Calvin Austin, yeah.
Just runs with it. And everybody's looking at each other like, I thought the ball was dead.
Yeah.
I thought Zach the ball Judge was
right
dead,
there. Dan. Yeah. Threw his beanbag, waved his arms.
It looked as if they had just waved it dead. But the guy mm-hmm. from Memphis runs in, grabs the ball, runs for a touchdown. And they counted it. They counted it. This is another one of the SEC stinky ref moments on Saturday.
Correct.
I don't know really what to say about this game, Dan. This is a bizarre game. We had a bunch of onside kicks. You're high on Mississippi State, so maybe you can diagnose this one for me, but what should we take away from this?
Mississippi State had opportunities to put this game away in the second half. That call was undeniably bad to me. With the ref waving his hands like he did, it was also, what, 2 different players wearing number 4 yep. for Memphis, which should have resulted in a penalty on that specific punt.
Yep.
It was bad. The ball was downed, but Mississippi State was up 10 in the second half and driving with a short field and turned it over on downs. They also had an interception, which they themselves couldn't get like the 12th or 12th and 13th men off the field.
Yep.
So it was errors plural. Now, obviously, you want to control your own errors. You don't want the ref deciding things and getting points on the board for the other team. But this is also a Mississippi State team who made mistakes of their own with the game there for the taking. So I feel bad for the Dogs, but ultimately, they had chances. They blew the game. It was a bad call. It was a an extremely terrible call. You can see the frame of the Mississippi State player with his knee on the ground, with his hand atop the ball, and the ref waving his arms in the air. It's just, you know, it's unfortunate. It's bad. This is going to happen. Luckily, I guess it wasn't a conference game. So big picture for Mississippi State, if they are that good, like I think they can be, they control their destiny. They were never going to be a playoff team. So, you know, it sucks. It's a bad break, undeniable bad break, but hope they can move past it.
Yeah.
By the way, the Ole Miss Tulane game, which I had mentioned earlier on, that's a full-on impressive performance from Ole Miss. They got Tulane off the field basically every third down. I think Tulane finished 1 of 10 on third down. If we're talking about incremental signs that Ole Miss's defense is getting better, Tulane is a real team with a real quarterback, and Ole Miss dominated them. I think they put up 700 yards of offense.
Matt Corral had 7 touchdowns, 3 through the air and 4 on the ground, which is not a bad showing.
No. So I wanted to make that note.
Let's move over to the ACC and close this guy out, Dan.
Yeah.
Let me read through these scores and then we can double back and talk about what moved us here. We had Clemson 14-8.
In a monsoon situation.
In a monsoon situation, we had a long delay. 14-8, they knock off Georgia Tech. We had North Carolina by 20 over UVA. A lot of stats. Stats galore in this game. 59-39. Big time shootout. We had Louisville. In a fun back and forth game on Thursday night. Tied late. Louisville picks one off. They ran it back 66 yards to grab the lead with 13 seconds left. 42-35, they win. Dylan Gabriel got hurt on the very last play of the game, which is a bummer. He'll be out for a while. Florida State loses 35-14. They're now 0-3 for the first time since 1976. Big win for Wake.
Not one, not two, not even four, not five, 6 turnovers for Florida State in a losing effort.
Not very good. Speaking of in a losing effort, Kenny Pickett, 6 touchdowns in a losing effort. They lose to Western Michigan 44-41.
Got torched by Caleb Ellaby, and themselves couldn't run the ball at all. Kenny Pickett was really good, and they're looks like they're going to waste what will be a good season. Jordan Addison had a really good game for Pitt too, right?
Yep.
He was one of the receivers that got going with that. Yeah, that's in it, to score 40 against a MAC team and lose. It's just inexcusable for Pitt.
BC won 28-3 over Temple. Syracuse wins 62-24 over Albany. Duke gets the win over Northwestern. They led 27-0 at the end of the second quarter before Northwestern finally got on the board. And Northwestern did try to come back, but they couldn't quite pull it off. This is a bad watch. 8 turnovers.
skipped through real quick this morning. Yeah.
NC State wins 45-7 over Furman. And I forgot to do this as well for... I mentioned the UVA game, but Brendan Armstrong threw for 554 and 4 touchdowns despite the losing effort as Virginia lost to North Carolina. Let me double back, though, to the Clemson game. So the long delay, you had the weird weather. 14-8 is, like, you would think, even despite all of the delays and the weather, Georgia Tech is not a team that we expected to be very good this year.
Correct. We hoped.
But
didn't expect, yeah.
Do we have to have a Clemson conversation at this point about the Clemson offense?
I think they need to be monitored. I think they need to be on our radar. I am willing to write off monsoon games. On a certain level, it's just very hard to get in a rhythm, whether it's gripping a ball, whether it's, you know, shortening, closing up, condensing the playbook. I think it needs to happen eventually, but I don't think this is the game where we need to say, okay, we definitely need to have it. Let's wait until there's at least okay weather and an opponent they should be scoring 30 or 40 against and they score 17. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but yeah, we had all those conversations early on in the season, or before the season started, like, okay, we got CJ Stroud and we've got Bryce Young and we've got DJU, we've got Emory Jones, we've got all these new quarterbacks and these places built for quarterbacks to succeed. And early on, like, Bryce Young has been really strong, but otherwise, Emory Jones made plays, but has made some bad mistakes. it's been a disappointing foursome, fivesome, whatever we're going to include in that grouping. And DJU just sort of looks big, right? At this point,
he's big. Like, he's big Cinco.
He's got a he throws a big ball. He's a big dude. He's big Cinco, but he is not in this moment a playoff quarterback.
No. Will Shipley, by the way, the five-star true freshman out of North Carolina, plays for Clemson, got some good looks on the ground here, and I thought looked impressive. I think if they could find a way to refine that rushing attack, he's definitely going to be a problem. He had 88 yards, 2 touchdowns in this game. Really like what I saw out of Will Shipley. I had read a lot about him going into the season, but this was, I feel like, the first time that we got to see him with some extended action. He looked really good.
Right. Would you like to hear something real quick, Ty? Just
please.
Because the game was unique this season. These were just all of the drives in North Carolina, Virginia. Punt, touchdown, fumble, touchdown, 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 punt, field goal, touchdown, interception, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, end of half, touchdown, punt, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, interception, touchdown, 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 end of game. 98 points later.
A lot of action there.
Yeah. So I don't want to just celebrate punts and missed field goals and turnovers on down. We should also celebrate just action.
Yeah, no. And Coastal Carolina, we should also mention with a...
Oh, yeah. Nice comeback win.
Comeback win, 28-25 on the road at Buffalo. And SMU. SMU beats Louisiana Tech and future Notre Dame coach Skip Holtz by a 39-37 score. Tanner Mordecai, remember him, transfers over.
It was the battle of, battle of former Oklahoma quarterbacks, right? Mordecai and Austin Kendall.
That is correct. Tanner Mordecai connects with Reggie Roberson, 33 yards for the go-ahead touchdown with just 6 seconds left to give SMU the victory. Bit of a dramatic close there.
Gotta knock down those Hail Marys, folks. Gotta knock them down. Can't just tip them up into the air. Yeah.
Would we like to do dudes?
I would love to do dudes.
Who are my dudes?
Jahan Dotson, obviously, but we're going to have to retire him soon. Travion Henderson, Ohio State. Jaylen Warren, Oklahoma State, paced that win really nicely. Josh Downs went for over 200, right, for North Carolina out wide. Corey Crooms, destroyed Pitt, absolutely destroyed Pitt. Jake Hayner for Fresno, warrior of a dude. Letty Brown for West Virginia, really put the ears on his back. Kenneth Walker, Kenny Walker, my guy, might need to be retired soon. J.J. Russell, linebacker for Memphis, all over the place in that winning effort against Mississippi State. And you already mentioned the in a losing effort guys. Also in a losing effort, the Patriot League got it handed to them by the Ivies. I think other than the Crusaders, right? The Crusaders were victors.
Are solid. They're solid. Yeah.
But the rest of the conference, not great, Bob.
Yeah, also Presbyterian in a losing effort.
Oh, yeah. They were.
Presbyterian, you'll recall their quarterback was the one who threw 10 touchdowns a couple weeks ago. Threw 7 picks in the game with Campbell, and they lost 72-0.
Generous. That's all I'm saying. Generous. Generous. Yeah. Oh, well.
Daniel, that does it for the week 3 reaction/recap show. We appreciate everyone calling into the Reverb line at 408 Verbal One. Got a ton of calls. Dylan did a good job putting that together. Don't forget to go on out to our website at solidverbal.com. That is where we post articles 3 days a week. That is where we post all of our episodes multiple days per week. So again, we record Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Post Monday, Wednesday, Friday out on the website. If you're a Patreon subscriber at verballers.com, you can get early access to all of those shows, plus many, many other perks. Again, verballers.com is where you can find out more. We also post Big Boy Bets out on the website. If you go to solidverbal.com, click on the betting spot up at the very top of the screen. You can get access to all of the picks that you and Jeff make. How'd you guys do this week, by the way?
I did well. I did better than Jeff. I think I got 2 of my 3 best bets. So that was nice. And I went against him on a couple of his, cause I know he liked ASU, I believe, against BYU, and just, you know, home dog elevation, J dogs, come on. Interesting week next week, in my backyard, we have Notre Dame, Wisconsin, which you called, I think, unwatchable.
Potentially unwatchable. Potentially unwatchable. But look, to your point on Clemson, Clemson goes to NC State next week.
They do indeed.
Clemson goes to NC State.
Which is, I think, their toughest road spot of their ACC schedule, it looks like.
We'll find out what they're made of. A&M is on the road at Arkansas, which...
a good one.
Yeah, given...
That's in Arlington.
Arlington?
It's usually neutral. Yeah, that's at Jerry World, yeah.
Given what we've got now brewing at A&M with the quarterback injury and Jefferson looking as good as he has at Arkansas, that is an interesting matchup. We've got the Iron Skillet game, SMU, TCU.
Yep.
Which is always
Stanford.
Fun to discuss. UCLA, Stanford, LSU, Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. Could be interesting. A bunch of games here that we'll dive into for sure as we push forward into week four.
Oh, West Virginia, Oklahoma. Okay.
We will be back on Wednesday to do the preview for week four as we really get this thing cranked up, diving into conference slates across the country. Gearing up for week five, which looks nutso.
Yeah, should be great.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, we will talk to y'all in a few short days. In the meantime, stay soft.